Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 235.
My favorite episode.
Yeah?
Because Randy's back.
Yes. Now, listeners don't know.
You made a sojourn to the Far Eastern
realms. But shortly after we finished recording our podcast last week, I disappeared for a week.
You're like, I must go off on my own journey. You will not understand this journey, but it is how I must find myself and return spiritually renewed.
At last, Randy Lander, off on his own, because you re-demanded it.
Yes. Or you went to BGGCon.
Right, or that. A titanic miniseries of epic proportions. I drank with Galactus. I got deaf. I got married. I'm trying to think what else happens in miniseries.
Deaf, like Deaf Comedy Jam?
Yes, like Deaf Comedy Jam. That's Hawkeye and Hercules, by the way, for those listening. Russell Sinclair, if you want to send us an email this week, the email to send is, I have read the Hawkeye and Hercules miniseries. I went to BGGCon. I played about 30 board games. I sent roughly 30-35 messages to Dave and Nick, like, hey, we should order this.
Yep.
Hey, guys, we should order this. Hey, do we have this in stock? They did not, to their credit, murder me when I got back.
Yep.
True.
Though murder was in their eyes.
Yes.
Instead,
I don't know if you've ever seen the scene in Casino where they catch the guys who are cheating.
Yes.
And they take a hammer to their fingers. But that's why Randy will be a little bit slower to ring you up next week.
It's fair. It's a fair price.
You'll recover.
But because of that, we now have a ton of new board games in the store.
Yeah.
And Randy will tell you about them if you ask him.
Yes.
Please ask him. Ask him all the questions.
Or I might tell you about it if you don't. I might just tell you.
We also got a new Prince.
Actually, I think if instead of asking about a particular single game, if they said, walk me through your selection of new games.
We also got a new Prince from Tim Doyle.
Yep.
Like things like there's a Doctor Who.
All that we got in
Hunk.
All the Blade Runner ones plus Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
They look super cool.
Plus those Wakanda
together.
Pins.
Yeah, we got the Wakanda pins. I mean, they look awesome, and I can imagine this would be great gifts.
Yeah, we're definitely starting to hit some of the Christmas stuff. Like, that's all good gifts. We got the...
Oh, by the way, the Blues Brothers one is also exceptional.
Yeah, awesome. The Blues Brothers great.
We got the D&D gift set with, like, the new fancy covers and the slipcase with the DM screen.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a bite. It's a big chunk of money, but... You're paying $5 for a slipcase, and then you're getting special edition covers of the 3 D&D books plus a GM screen. If you have someone in your life who's like been wanting to try D&D, and you want to give them a good expensive gift, that's going to give them everything they need to run D&D for years.
Yep.
Yep.
Plus, it's got those covers that basically everybody is dying for and murdering for.
Yeah.
Whenever a new D&D product comes out with a variant cover these days.
Yep. When we get to topics, if we have time this week, I'm going to cover some of the games I played and some of my top 10 and some of that stuff. But yeah, definitely come in and check out. We got a bunch of games, either new games or some games that had fallen through the cracks, but were really, really good. So, moving on to this week's news, I have just real quick. We have Thanksgiving is Thursday, so we will be closed, so we can all go and enjoy turkey or ham or whatever you eat for Thanksgiving.
Numbers.
Ham? Where is ham? You have to have turkey on Thanksgiving.
Now, there's an argument to be made. In fact, I believe there's a think piece on the internet, because there's always a think piece on the internet.
I mean, that's what the internet is there for.
That ham is better than turkey on Thanksgiving. And here's the thing. I like turkey, but turkey can often be dry. You need gravy with it. You only need a little bit. Ham is always delicious.
Ham is delicious, but...
I like the idea of the change-up.
Me too.
How about this? Complete change-up. Just have salmon.
No, that's terrible.
What, are you insane?
But
I would eat it. I would eat it, 100% sure.
Thanksgiving steak could be a thing, though.
Yeah.
I would eat a Thanksgiving steak.
Yep.
I remember one year that my sister...
How about steak and lobster?
Not for Thanksgiving, but for Christmas, she decided we should have salmon, and it was weird.
That is weird.
I missed the ham.
Was it decently made?
No, she's a horrible cook.
No! I love salmon, but bad salmon is sad salmon.
And I believe we have the title for this week's episode.
Yay!
All right. But after Thanksgiving, after Thursday, we'll all be here on Friday, because it is our annual Black Friday. I don't know, 10th annual Black Friday
100th
sale.
Annual
feels like
Black Friday.
So if you come in, every $25 you spend on merchandise, you get a $5 gift certificate that you can spend as early as Saturday, or you can give it to other people. You can break them up into multiple ones, give them out to people for their Christmas presents.
Yep.
The only exception, the only thing we're adding is this year, you can't buy gift certificates to get gift certificates, because that's just cheating.
Yes.
And if you have a membership card, you can whip that thing out, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely, they should whip it out.
And for every $20, you get a $5 gift certificate. So make sure and do that. Make sure and come in. Do a bunch of early Christmas shopping, or, you know, some shopping for yourself. There's a bunch of cool games you can get.
Yeah. And buy yourself something nice.
I don't have any other stuff. Like, the next Magic pre-release is in January. There's nothing I know particularly in December.
The holidays are too busy for us to be doing, like, a ton of craziness.
That's true. But it is always free for you to come in and try out the demo library. There's a bunch of new demo games in there, so you can come try out board games anytime you want. Bring relatives who are here from out of town. Bring them to your favorite local game store.
Yeah, totally.
Play some games. Buy some stuff.
Have a knife fight.
Don't have a knife fight. In the parking lot, if you want to.
I don't want to clean up blood. I'm tired of cleaning up blood.
All right. Also coming to theaters this Christmas is Once Upon a Deadpool. So, we've talked about this. They're recutting Deadpool 2 into a PG-13 movie, which Fox has been wanting from day one.
Yep.
And they finally got what they wanted. Apparently Ryan Reynolds, and I don't know if this is true or if this is just marketing, I feel like it might be true, that Ryan Reynolds had two conditions to do this.
Mm-hmm.
One was that he wanted the money to be donated to a charity. Some of the money to be donated to charity. So like $1 every ticket goes to the Fuck Cancer charity.
Which is amazing.
Which Ryan Reynolds...
That's definitely true, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was Ryan Reynolds' idea.
Oh, okay. But
I could easily see.
At the very least, the donation for sure is a real thing.
But Ryan Reynolds also did say it is renamed Fudge Cancer for just these 2 weeks. which is pretty great. And the other thing is he wanted to kidnap Fred Savage. And so the grown-up Fred Savage, who, by the way, is one of those most depraved directors of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He has all the most depraved episodes. He is a really dark, hilarious sense of humor.
Do people know who Fred Savage is?
Fred Savage is the kid from Princess Bride.
Yep. What else? He was also the kid on The Wonder Years.
On The Wonder Years.
Yep. If you were around in the 80s, you know him. If you didn't, you don't know him. But please send us an email saying, I know Fred Savage.
He had a sitcom not too long ago with Rob Lowe.
Working? No.
No, Working was really good.
The Grinder was the newest one.
Working was fun.
Fred Savage is actually really funny. He's by all accounts a really good guy. And yes, he played the kid in Princess Bride, which, by the way, even though our audience is different ages, I am pretty sure 95 to 99% of people listening to us have watched Princess Bride.
I think that's true. I think they may just not have known that that kid's name was Fred Savage.
That kid's name is Fred Savage. And so
he was big in the 80s.
Did they know that the grandpa
was in the 80s?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Did they know the grandpa's name is Peter Falk?
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Oh, but Columbo.
So basically, this trailer and possibly this movie looks like Deadpool has kidnapped adult Fred Savage, taped him to the bed of the childhood bedroom where they did Princess Bride, and he's going to tell him a PG-13 version of the Deadpool 2 story.
Yes.
Which is amazing. And actually,
I have to admit, it's a very funny trailer.
Yeah.
And perhaps this might get more kids to see Princess Bride in a weird kind of roundabout way.
Sure.
The most hilarious thing in the trailer was them making fun of the Marvel movies.
Yes.
That was so good.
Where the Deadpool, he's like, we are Marvel, and he's like, yeah, but not really.
He's like, you're not really. You're Marvel licensed by Fox. It's kind of like if the Beatles were produced by Nickelback. It's still music, but it sucks.
Yeah.
I love that.
Great delivery from Fred Savage. Savage delivery, if you will.
Yes.
Is this going to be one of those weird things where I'm going to own two different versions of Deadpool 2?
I'm 100% sure you will.
Possible. Would have been nice is if they had done it as an extra.
Yeah.
For the DVD, but then you can't make as much money on it.
No.
And studios like mine.
But if I'm, that's true. And I will go see it to support, you know, Fuck Cancer. I will do that.
Won't go see it, but I'll donate some money to him anyway.
You should see it.
No.
See it.
No, I don't want to see I don't want to see a kidified version of
Dave's
Deadpool. I need only the real Deadpool who's hardcore.
Dave's going to wait until Deadpool 5 comes out and buy the
box. I'm going to email Ryan Reynolds and make him drag you to...
But Dave doesn't like Ryan Reynolds either.
Ryan Reynolds, a.k.a. Detective Pikachu?
You never know. Ryan Reynolds might show up here and drag you to see Deadpool.
That sounds like... If he shows up,
that's actually kidnapping.
Since I am the only one in the world who has resisted Deadpool this whole time, let me say... Ryan Reynolds ever comes to take me out to see Deadpool. Yes, I'll go.
And will you hold hands?
If he wants to.
Consent is important.
Yes, absolutely.
Consent is definitely important.
I'll buy the popcorn.
Yes. Oh, that's nice.
And if our hands happen to touch while we're getting popcorn and we're all greased up...
David Wade's very David Ryan's very special date.
I mean, he's gonna be decked out in full Deadpool costume. Oh, right?
Sure. You mean Dave or Wade? Ryan Reynolds will show up in Deadpool costume with a Dave-sized Deadpool costume. He's like, saddle up, buddy. We're going to the movies.
I'll tell you, if he goes in his Deadpool costume or any other way, we will be destroyed by fans, and I will be dead no matter what.
God darn.
Well, he will have to put on like a big super fake mustache and a lumberjack beard
over his Deadpool costume.
Yeah, over his Deadpool costume.
So something that we all like is Jeff Lemire.
Yes.
You know who else likes Jeff Lemire?
Everybody.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because Jeff Lemire had two movie and TV deals announced this week. One is that Black Hammer, the shared superhero universe he created that we all really like.
Yep.
That I think I am caught up on. You guys are mixed on.
Yes.
But we all really, really like. And Legendary Entertainment, the people who did, I don't know, they did a bunch of stuff. I think they did Pacific Rim.
They did.
Apparently they did Batman Begins, which I didn't know.
They
have picked up Black Hammer for Legendary Television Studios. So we don't know if they're going to do TV or movies or both, but there is plenty of room to do both.
Yep. Although I could see it doing well in the TV format, since it is a sort of long form story.
Yeah.
Those who read the comics know that there's sort of the main Black Hammer comics, and there's been like, what, three or four spin-off miniseries that are kind of explore other superhero concepts, from supervillains to the sort of far-flung future superheroes to kind of a golden age hero. They do all have ties to events going on in the core book. But, like, I think it'd be kind of cool if they had, like, if the TV series kind of mimicked what was going on there, where what if they did, like, you know, a Black Hammer, you know, like, you know, 10 episode season or something like that.
Yep.
And then they had like between seasons, they did like, you know, they did like a four episode. Yeah. Dr. Star or one of the others.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a kind of cool way to do it. So you get the mini series between the macro series.
So this story, it's in the New York Times, written by George Gustines, who's done a lot of the comics coverage for New York Times.
Okay.
And it closes out by noting that Lemire is involved in writing the adaptations. He's adding to a workload that includes a graphic novel, Frogcatchers, to be published by Simon & Schuster. And he says, and this makes so much sense, "The more projects I have, the more creative I become. With Black Hammer, I'm at least a year or two ahead of being published."
Wow.
"Which allows him to take breaks. Those often involve other projects like screenplays or drawing comics. It doesn't even feel like work for me. It's what I would be doing anyway. The more I can do, the more I'll do." So basically, that's why Lemire is so ahead. He likes working on a million things.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I can even say he has an amazing work ethic. He is compelled to, and he's one of the ultimate loves his job kind of guys.
Yep.
But that is nevertheless, it's crazy impressive how much output he has and how high the quality he generally maintains.
Yeah. The other thing is that Hulu has ordered a pilot for his show Sweet, or for his comic Sweet Tooth, which was, I think, maybe not his very first thing, but it's pretty early on. It was
one of his first breakouts. He had that indie thing.
Essex County.
Yeah.
The Essex County graphic novels.
But he did that for Vertigo.
Yeah. Sweet Tooth for Vertigo. It came out ended in 2013, created in 2009. It is about a post-apocalyptic world where humanity nearly eradicated by a mysterious plague. It coincides with the arrival of human-animal hybrids.
Right. The lead character is this, like, I don't know, is he like he's a teenage kid who is like a human deer hybrid, you know? Like, he's got like a deer like face and antlers, but dresses and wears human clothes and
he's
stuff.
He's this very sort of innocent kid. He's got this human hunter type dude who's like his father figure.
Yep. And he's like, in his life of like living with his dad, it's like they've lived in a forest all their lives that seems to be generally safe, but it seems like there's and I never read past the first volume, so I actually don't know how it all kind of plays out.
Right.
But essentially, there seems like scarier, apocalyptic, The Road-style stuff.
For sure.
Outside of that, and basically, he has to leave after his father dies.
Yeah.
And decide who to trust and figure out what's going on in the world, and why are there human-animal hybrids is a random question.
Right.
Did they answer that?
They did.
What's the answer? No, don't say it.
Tell you.
Don't say it.
Jim Mickle is writing and directing the pilot episode. He developed Hap and Leonard for Sundance and is working on a new movie for Netflix. This all sounds good. I'm in.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I wonder how they'll do the special effects on that.
They're going to get real human-animal hybrids.
What I'm going to guess is a regular dude, like a skinny teenage actor, and a little CGI deer head on him or something.
Maybe. I bet it's practical effects.
I bet they do practical.
It'd be easier to practical.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm sure...
It'll just look like a fake deer with like a little hinged mouth that's like, hey, everybody!
Here's the thing. My friend Ashley dressed up as Gus, the lead character, for Halloween a few years back.
Yep.
It was an amazing costume.
Yeah.
And perfectly captured it. If Ashley can do it on that budget, I'm quite sure that Hulu has the money to do it.
I forget. Does he have a pronounced deer snooter?
No. I think mostly just kind of the antlers.
Yeah, okay. Because I was thinking he had, the snout. And, if he doesn't have that, then there's no reason to not kind of do practical makeup. Yeah,
I think he'll do practical.
Okay. There was just a snoot question.
It was just a snoot question, as always. We have our Lex Luthor for Supergirl.
Right.
And it's John Cryer, who some people are making Superman 4 jokes. I've never seen Superman 4. Someone please explain this to me.
He played Lex Luthor's nephew.
Okay.
He was his spoiled rich kid kind of nephew, who was kind of a whiny, all I remember is that there's a part where Superman or somebody kind of, no, I think it might be Nuclear Man himself, is using his power and kind of spinning him around, and he's on his back spinning around because of he's just using energy manipulation or whatever, and John Cryer's whoa, he's I'm breakdancing. As Nuclear Man spun him.
I'm glad I've never seen Superman 4.
It's really good. And Superman gets, cancer from the Nuclear Man.
Ah, that's rough.
It actually... I'm going to say there's, a handful of moments in it that are good just because Christopher Reeve can act.
Yeah.
Everything else in it is the trashiest trash you've ever seen.
So the last few things I've seen from John Cryer was I remember he was in Two and a Half Men forever.
Yeah.
Which basically makes him forever a feather unclean.
But he did something, and...
So he's bald now. I don't know if this was... if he did that for Lex Luthor. But he looks the part.
What was that movie in the 80s where he was an accountant who went undercover in high school because the mob was trying to kill him?
Oh, wow.
You know, remember that?
You know that movie. I'm sure. There's
was
no way
hiding out?
Yeah, I think that was it.
I remember the trailer. I never saw that one either.
I always kind of liked it. It was one of those where essentially it was a very gimmick premise, obviously.
Yeah.
But the whole point was that he kind of he gets to be a little bit of a Ferris Bueller while he's trying to keep his head low, he can't help but I think he's supposed to be a little bit of an egotist, and so he's got to kind of probably that's his arc is to probably learn some humility.
Right.
I am almost certain he dates a high school girl and what would definitely now be a creepy sequence.
Oh my god.
But I'm sure at the time was the she's very mature and he's a little immature.
Oh.
But I believe that did happen.
Yikes.
Anyway, I remember generally liking him and a kind of... He was kind of a fun, slightly Weasley guy.
Yeah, okay.
I could see him playing Luthor. I could actually see it working out.
Well, they've done... I mean, Luthor's wife and daughter have both been in the show.
Sister.
Sister, not daughter.
Sister, you're right. Not daughter. Sister.
Yeah.
I think most people know him from...
So it's not his wife either. It's his sister and his mother.
Lena Luthor?
Lena Luthor.
I guess most people know him from Pretty in Pink.
Right. He's Ducky.
He is Ducky.
Yeah, I was trying to remember, what's his most famous role? That's it.
But anyway, it's interesting now that we have seen Supergirl will now have had Lex Luthor and Superman in there.
Yep.
Are they doing Lois Lane? They got to do Lois Lane at some point.
Yeah, she's showing up, I think.
Okay. So at this point, it's just Superman, and it's just Supergirl show that has Superman stuff in it, which is great. I love it. I'm waiting for Batman to actually show up in Arrow. I like that the big two or the big three, if Wonder Woman ever shows up, which probably won't because the movie was successful.
You don't have to worry too much about them overshadowing everybody.
Yeah,
they were late to the party.
They're the also runs. I love that.
Yeah. Well, right. Well, it's like launching a superhero universe with the second, third tier characters gives them a chance to be A-listers.
John Cryer also voiced in the Justice League action cartoon Felix Faust.
Okay.
That's what I mainly know him for.
Yeah.
I saw him, I was like, John Cryer, voice of Felix Faust? he's had a foot in superhero things.
Yes.
So.
All right. This is a holdover from last week. We just had a lot of news and we were running a little late. Netflix announced they're doing a bunch of anime series, which I don't know that any of us are huge anime fans, but this list of stuff is very interesting to me. So they're doing a Pacific Rim series, that is focused on two young siblings forced to pilot an old Jaeger through a barren, dangerous, possibly kaiju-infested land in search of their parents. That's from Craig Kyle, who co-wrote Thor Ragnarok, which I didn't realize.
Yep.
But he also, Craig Kyle was one of the guys that was involved along with Chris Yost. He was Chris Yost's partner. And so they did a ton of stuff like Spider-Man cartoons.
The Avengers.
The Avengers, Earthbound Heroes.
Earthbound Heroes.
Yeah, so like a lot of the good Marvel stuff has come from Craig Kyle. So that's a good sign. And Greg Johnson is another animated Marvel writer. So they're gonna do a Pacific Rim thing. Altered Carbon, which was one of my favorite shows of this year, has a... the pitch is vague. It says, explore new elements of the story mythology, which is this weird cyberpunk-y story. But it is being written by Cowboy Bebop creator, or one of Cowboy Bebop's people, Dai Soto.
I would assume not covering the... What's the main character's name? Kovacs.
Kovacs, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it'll probably.
I know. I think it's gonna be something else about the Altered Carbon world, but that's interesting. There's also a few other things. Kagister of an Insect Cage, which is a post-apocalypse manga. People trying to survive in a disease world, transform people into killer bugs. Trace, which is based on a Filipino graphic novel that blends Philippine folklore with a criminal underworld and its supernatural adaptation.
I think of all of those, that's the only one that sort of sounds interesting to me.
And Yasuki, based on the historical Black Samurai, with mechs and magic. Voiced by Lakeith Stanfield from Sorry to Bother You, and LaShawn Thomas as
creator. Did you say Black Samurai, like, racially?
Yep.
Black Samurai?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, LaShawn Thomas did the Boondocks, but has also done a bunch of stuff in comics. Lakeith Stanfield's great. I am curious about all of this,
sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, these all sound interesting to me. I may watch them. I specifically also want to call it, this is not in the original article, but there's a... the director of Book of Life is doing an animated series called Maya and the Three, which is described as sort of a humorous Mexican Lord of the Rings, starring a female superhero who is half human and half divine, and that it's going to draw heavily from Mesoamerican legends. And the director, painter, and animator who did Book of Life is going to be doing 4 of the 9 episodes and serving as the screenwriter.
Book of Life was really good. I would try that out.
That sounds fantastic. There's also plans for a potential sequel to Book of Life. And
just real quick, not to pit two good movies against each other, but Book of Life and Coco came out close to each other.
Book of Life was first.
And and did very very different things. I think they're both very good movies.
Yep.
But they both kind of like revolved around the Day of the Dead, at least as like kind of a launching point. I like Book of Life a little bit better.
I think I do too, but it's probably because it was the original.
I think I liked the characters a little bit better.
Yeah. Coco's plot was also a little more predictable.
Yeah.
Book of Life, I feel, and Book of Life wasn't unpredictable. It was more of a folktale feel.
Right.
And so it didn't quite bother me that it was going a little tropey.
Right. Right. Yeah, just curious.
Yeah, no, they're both good. Both have good music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
One little bit of comic news. There's a new Female Furies series coming from Cecil Castellucci, who's written a lot of stuff.
Furies, that is like Darkseid's band of Lady Warriors.
Stampa, Lashina.
Artist Adriana Mello from Plastic Man will be the artist. 6-issue miniseries. And yeah, it is... I don't know what else we know about it. Let's see.
Other than it's just focusing on that group on Apocalypse.
Did I hear it's like their early days?
It may have been, yeah.
I think I remember reading that somewhere. That sounds pretty cool to me. I think you could have some fun with it if you don't go too dark, where they're just like, let's go oppress people. if you kind of make it a door-kicking down, badass, bad guys, bad gals kind of book, I think it could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
A few different directions I could see working for it.
The last thing I want to mention was we have to say rest in peace to another titan. Not Stan Lee this week, but William Goldman died.
Right.
Again, older gentleman, had a good life. But William Goldman, for those who don't know, wrote Princess Bride, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, and also...
Actually did not do The Sting. I believe that was directed by the
same director?
He did all the President's Men.
Yeah, he
did all the President's Men. Right, yep. Right.
Yeah, no, I thought he did this thing too, but I believe it was the George Roy Hill, I think, okay. directed yeah. both that and.
Okay. That makes sense.
I know he has a kind of a weird history with the All the President's Men, because I know, like, historically, like, Robert Redford took it and kind of rewrote a lot of it.
That's interesting.
But,
That he also, like, he was, you know, he, in some ways, he's a screenwriter, and he also had a famous book on it that a lot of people have read who get into screenwriting.
Yep.
But he like notably say wrote the script for Misery, one of the best Stephen King adaptations, and you know like wrote the book Princess Bride and then the movie that was you know heavily tweaked.
He wrote the original Stepford Wives.
Yeah, yeah.
1975.
And like a script doctor to a million movies.
Yeah, I was gonna say he was a huge script doctor. He did so much.
Oh, right. I think I saw like there's all these movies that are like have like some nice polish to them that are like he's uncredited on sometimes just for whatever reason.
Well, and the thing is, his book Which Lie Did I Tell is a fantastic book. I read it, and he closes out with a screenplay. I think it's a screenplay of Butch Cassidy and Sundance, and it's an amazing screenplay.
That's awesome.
He was one of the best writers in the industry, and I mean, if only for Princess Bride.
You know, there's an axiom that he has, and I really need to read his screenwriting book, but it's kind of something I've always sort of paid attention to ever since I found out about it, just see, because I think it's interesting when writers do it. And it was something like, arrive late, leave early.
Yeah.
In a scene, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, if you're telling, I suppose Raiders of the Lost Ark might be a good random example. Mm-hmm. When that begins, you don't find out the origin of Indiana Jones. You don't slowly learn his story. He is mid-mission as a well-established adventurer. And the sort of leave early, this is, again, specifically referring to a scene, is sort of kind of refers to, like, not overstaying your welcome. Like, once what needs to be said is said, don't stick around. Move on. Yeah. Cut the scene.
Yep.
And I think it's a broadly great, simple recipe for tight screenwriting.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think Princess Bride is his claim to fame? Or
Yes.
Yeah.
Really? Butch Cassidy is amazing, but Princess Bride...
They're like the most unifying movie of them all.
It is. It is rare. If you find someone who doesn't like Princess Bride, that person is a sociopath.
Get away from them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, even though Robert Redford had a hand, I think All the President's Men is definitely an amazing script.
These are all, like, essentially they're all gold, you know, movies.
But Princess Bride is the one that's that he's most known, beloved for.
Yeah. And, like, I can't say, like I was always a big Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid fan, and I revisit it every once in a while and always enjoy it.
I revisited it this week.
But, that's right, I saw you were watching that. But I don't, you know, and it's, like, so different from Princess Bride, it's hard to compare them.
Right.
But it's, like, the particular level of perfection and approachability of Princess Bride and its heartwarmingness and, like, wit and all that stuff is just, like, through the roof.
Yeah. He built great characters.
Yeah.
He did.
All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. One familiar cry. Rocast. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 21st, and I'm freshly back from the wilderness, and I'm going to start this week.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Can't just do that.
Also, I have a number one, and everybody else doesn't necessarily have number one.
Oh, that's true.
So the book I'm going to talk about here is American Carnage number one. This is not Carnage the Venom Symbiote, although he will feature in this week's picks.
Yep.
This is a Vertigo book from Brian Hill, art by Leandro Fernandez, who we've always liked since his early work in the country. Brian Hill's written a lot of stuff I don't like. He wrote the Michael Cray Wildstorm. He's written some other stuff. He's been on books that I want to like, and I just haven't liked his style.
Yep.
So this was one I was like, I'm probably not going to like this. I actually really dug it. It is the story of a half-black, passing-for-white FBI agent who accidentally shot a black kid who was reaching for his cell phone and has been sort of pushed out of the bureau as a result. Now he kind of is washed up, and this woman, an agent who lost her partner to a white supremacist, murderers, comes to him and she's like, yeah, the bureau is shutting all my investigations down, but I know that there's this big... writer to this Fox News type writer dude, I forget his name in this, Wynn Morgan, who's written a book called The Essence of America, And she's like, he's definitely the guy behind this sort of white supremacist organization. The Bureau's not doing anything. So she hires him as a private eye to basically go undercover inside this.
This would be the equivalent of, like, finding out, like, that Bill O'Reilly is secretly running, like, a... I mean, we know how possible it is.
Yeah, this guy's smarter than Bill O'Reilly, though. She basically sends this guy undercover, passing for white, in this white supremacist organization. And it's all about him getting in with it and whether or not these people are actually evil, which of course they are, because it wouldn't be much of a story if they weren't. And it's sort of gritty crime and reminds me of things I like Human Target, 100 Bullets, and that kind of stuff that Vertigo used to do. Nice art.
You mentioned 100 Bullets, and of course, even though he is not Eduardo Risso, there is absolutely a style crossover there. So, like, if you like Eduardo Risso's art.
Isn't it Leandro Fernandez?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who has that vibe, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's set in L.A. It is a sort of crime undercover book, which is right up my alley.
I like that kind of stuff. I'm gonna for sure check it out.
And I thought this was a really good first issue. So I would definitely, of the Vertigo launches so far, I think this might be my favorite. I would definitely point people in that direction. Nick, what is your pick?
I'm going to talk about a book I have probably picked all the issues of, is Black Badge. This is the fourth issue.
Black Badge, the story of the Black Ops Boy Scouts.
Yes, yep. The story of the Black Ops Boy Scouts. And, I mean, I like it for everything I've mentioned before, so go back and listen to those. But this is kind of an interesting story because we've sort of finally see kind of the broader strokes of what the story is telling. Like, perhaps the Black Badge group is being used mm-hmm. by government overlords,
mm-hmm.
and there are other things afoot in the world. But there's also in this a, what do they call this, the Badge Jamboree that they get invited to, which is all the other kind of badge groups. There's the Pink Badge, the Blue Badge, the White Badge, and then, of course, the Black Badge group.
Okay.
And they're all sort of having
Are they different levels of, like, intelligence, kind
they're,
of? Or?
They're each one focused on a different thing. So Blue Badge is high-level data analysis. They are like the smart people, but they're also kind of ruthless.
Yep.
White Badge are psyops and propaganda. The Pink Badge, which is a little condescending because the scoutmaster is like, there are precocious all-female scout troop. Don't let their good nature deceive you. And all the girls are like, you know, F you.
Right.
And of course the Black Badge, which is the demolition, assassination, and wet work team.
Right.
Honestly, just great characters by Matt Kent, beautiful artwork by Tyler Jenkins. I just love the packaging of this thing. Not only do we get a great story, but he also, at the end of it, we get a nice little, what do they call it? The Black Badge New Recruit Aptitude and Personality Questionnaire.
He's been throwing in a lot of little things like that in the back, right? If I'm not like, they'll show the merit badges or whatever.
Well, I want to read a couple of the merit badges on the back of this one because I think they're great. But the Aptitude and Personality Questionnaire is fantastic. There's a lot of just great sense of humor, but it's just fun. And then the badges on the back, there are things like Surreptitious poisoning, household explosives, alternative weaponry, pocket picking, cyberbullying, ninja stars, strategic bullying.
That's messed up.
Yeah, it's a so
would you
much
say,
fun.
Is it a messed up book?
No, actually, it's kind of, it is very much G.I. Joe. I think Kent just likes to have fun with, like, the badges and sort of the backup material.
And there's a dark elements to it, but it's not an overall, like, grim book.
No, it's not insanely grim, but it is very kind of straightforward, and, I mean, it's dark, because it's kids doing wet work.
Yeah.
Which is kind of bizarre, but it has those G.I. Joe flavors.
And it's stylized universe, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they map out here why they use kids, because they are almost invisible. They can get anywhere, and
it almost makes too much sense.
I know. I wonder if this is a I can easily
Matt Kent
see
is
it.
Trying to expose this.
Yes, obviously they will. The Black Badge unit will be seeing
yeah. You'll
him
have to
soon.
Be silenced soon. Seeing me, seeing you, Nick.
So, but yeah, I really think more people should check this out and watch the inevitable show that this will be.
Yep.
Dave, what is your pick?
My pick, this is for me Donnie Cates Day, a.k.a. Double Donnie.
Double Donnie. Double Donnie Tuesday. Yeah.
Yep. Now, as y'all know, when I was, I guess when we picked the first issue of Marvel Knights, I'd also been, like, diving a little bit into his Venom stuff recently, and I was like, I kind of see why people are digging this guy. He's all right. Well, Marvel Knights 2, their, you know, spinoff, or it's, well, how'd you even call this? Like, it's a spiritual successor to the original Marvel Knights launch from, like, 20 years ago.
And yet also a sort of
But it's completely its own thing. It's a big mystery. It's a, this cool mystery about these mind-wiped heroes.
It's like a new mystery featuring those main characters.
It just happens to be their kind of street-level characters. So Daredevil, Punisher, Elektra, who else? There's also some weird connection, like, to Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
And stuff in this. And, The kind of twists and turns in this are really cool. Like, in some ways, issues 1 and 2 have both been recruitment issues, but big reveals happen in both of them. And the last one, for instance, Matt Murdock kind of came face-to-face with Karen Page.
Yep.
And there's definitely, like, I'm trying to figure out, you know, like, you know, Frank Castle, a cop, was trying to tell him who he was. He's like... And clearly was, like, understood. He's like, I know, you're not going to remember this. So that, like, he had been told, or he knew the deal, that there was some sort of mind wipe had happened. Do we yet know if this is the standard Marvel 616 universe?
I think it is,
but I don't know.
I assume it is. And there's some... The way they handle the stuff with Karen in it is really interesting in this. I don't want to say too much about it. But it's very interesting, and it sort of makes a lot of sense, kind of how it works. Beyond that, there's a
fun flashback on, you know, how we see, like, Frank actually finding out about things.
Right, when kind of Bruce Banner came to him and kind of started telling him, here's the weird stuff I know.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, even though, like, we're all kind of still in the dark on the big stuff in this, I feel like I'm learning interesting things almost every page, so it's not that frustrating kind of, when are they going to get around to telling what's going on?
The notion of how Bruce Banner knows things, I felt was very cool.
Yeah, it is both weird and fascinating.
Yeah.
I have to just quick say, whoever this artist is, I kind of want to draw everything now.
That is Nico Henrikson, who did some Runaways work, I believe.
That's interesting. I can see it. But there's kind of this grittiness to this one. It's, like, still a little cartoony. There's almost, like, a manga style to it. But the, like, the hatching style reminds me of, like, Guy Davis or something like that. So it's, like, kind of got a little bit his kind of grittiness that he had on BPRD and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This issue culminates, I don't know if I want to say the character, in Frank trying to bring in another recruit. There's another character. And let's just say the fight goes poorly for him.
Such a great
and is one of the
scene.
Best fight scenes I've seen with that character, because it's just brutal. And honestly, even though Frank is kind of getting his butt handed to him, like, he comes off well in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it reminded me of, like, when Slam Bradley fought Batman, and he was just like, I will not sit down. And he's like, I am getting pulverized, and I'm going to keep getting up.
Yeah.
Frank has that same determination, so I think he's cool, and I do think this is not a hand-to-hand fight. He's going to win. So that made sense, but it's a great extended sequence with some of this guy's art is killing it. But yeah, overall, this is a big mystery comic, and just like the first one, it ends with a big cool reveal. Essentially, it has kind of completed the main gathering of the players. There's obviously more to come, but a lot of the people are sort of assembled by the end. By the way, that's one of the coolest versions of his costume, and I'm not going to say who he is, because I don't want to reveal that on air, but I thought it looked super cool.
The secret weapon of this book is definitely Nico Henrikson. His stuff is great.
But yeah, I, like, couldn't have been more pleased with this issue. Definitely, and not at all what I would have expected. If somebody said that Donnie Cates is going to write a story about Marvel street-level heroes not knowing who they are, I would have been like, well, that sounds like the worst thing I've ever heard. But instead, it's one of the best comics I've read in the last few months. So so that's Marvel Knights number 2, and should I just jump to my next pick? All right, let's keep up Double Donnie Tuesdays. With my newfound love of all things Venom, this is the Web of Venom series, which are all a bunch of one-shots.
Yeah.
This one is called Carnage Born.
Well, you've always been the big Carnage fan.
I'm such a big Carnage fan that I've avoided him almost every single appearance he's ever had. because I don't want to spoil myself on him.
Right, yeah.
But, yes, he's like the, like, Venom, but more hardcore.
Yeah,
the
what serial, if Venom was a serial
killer? Serial killer Venom.
I thought this take on Venom was, or this take on Carnage was pretty, it was interesting.
Well, as I've been reading some of Donny Cates' Venom, which, by the way, trade hits this week, I'm going to recommend it.
Yeah, should. It's good.
I didn't read all of it because I was trying to read random single issues and we just were out of some of them. But he was clearly building the mythology, and it actually reminded me on a slightly smaller scale of what Geoff Johns did with the Green Lantern Corps, which is to find cool stuff that still felt creepy and venomy, but did create this cosmology. And like a bigger tapestry of history with the symbiotes and their whole race and their creepy, was it God thing that's called Null?
Yep.
And this begins essentially when last we knew Cletus Kasady, aka Carnage, was dead. After having several times kind of been killed off in the comics.
Well, yeah, I mean he was killed in New Avengers when Sentry ripped him in half and threw him into space.
And that was like 15 years ago or something now.
And he's come back, I think, twice since. Yep.
And but what this begins with is a cultist. There's a cult that's built itself up around his own cult of personality, and his sort of deaths. And they actually explain it kind of in an interesting sequence about how he supposedly choked to death and briefly died in the womb because he had like an umbilical cord tangled around his neck. And he would later claim to like a prison psychiatrist that he could remember it, even though nobody can generally remember that stuff, and that he felt like he dreamt of being in this endless black abyss, but inside a cage inside of it, and that led to him wanting to free people from their cages, and that like when he cuts people up and mutilates their bodies,
he's not killing
them. He's freeing them from their prisons,
their
fleshy prisons. Yeah. Anyway. This is, at the very least, it's the story the cult has bonded with.
Yep.
They actually walk you through sort of the cosmology of it, well, from what they know. They talk you through his resurrections and how they kind of have acquired sort of like his body from the cult clearly has some power because they, you know, essentially put together like a hit squad that like took down, I don't know, it wasn't like S.H.I.E.L.D., but it could have been S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And they like essentially retrieved his body. I don't want to spoil things too much, but when they kind of try and resurrect him, it doesn't go as well for them as they might have hoped. And interestingly, like if you think like, the kind of interesting thing is that all the history that you get is their kind of view, their interpretation.
Yeah.
If you don't happen to like it, you can take it as a crazy cult thing. Cletus himself doesn't seem to give a crap about it. You know? And interesting things happen, though, once the sort of resurrection happens. And there is actually a clear-cut sort of focus as to what he is intending to do based on sort of information acquired through the cult. Anyway, it's a dark, bloody, murderous-y kind of story, but the kind of weird alien cosmology of it all kind of fascinates me, and I'm kind of having more fun with the symbiotes at the moment than I would have expected. So that's why Web of Venom, Carnage Born, is my cheater pick for the week.
Nick?
My backup pick is Exorcisters number 2, which...
I like this one, too.
Yeah, it essentially continues the tale of the twin sisters that are not exactly sisters, who are kind of demonologists in a lot of ways, and exorcists. But this issue focuses more on the main character's mom than anything, and sort of a series of flashbacks as to how we figure out what happened to her, what her part in the occult is. And I actually thought all of that stuff was really, really good. I liked it. It's still got a sense of humor.
You know, that art, I'm just flipping, seeing it as you flipped it upside down. It reminds me of Amanda Conner, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. But we also find out why our main character, their name is Kate, right? Or I can't remember. Why she is the way she is, why there are two of them. We do get answers to that.
But so they're not like not hiding their mysteries particularly in that.
This is the backstory, and it's good. I really liked it.
Yeah, and the story with the mother continues, and I've not seen that dynamic really in the way that Ian Boothby is portraying this, and I think this is fantastic. It's just got a unique voice.
That's an interesting. Yeah, I need to read this because I haven't read it, and I believe everybody else on the staff has really liked that, and yep. That's like pretty rare for pretty much the whole staff to get behind it. Yeah. I need to read it so I can hate it and be the odd man out at the iconoclast.
Right.
Also, their demons are jerks. Randy, what is your backup pick?
My backup pick is Immortal Hulk number 9, which I think I've picked several issues of this book. This features a new red absorbing man. It's all in this story. So this goes back and shows basically Absorbing Man being recruited by this crazy shadow agency that's been tracking the Hulk. They modify him so he can go up against the Hulk, because as he points out to these guys, he's like, he's pulverized me, literally, I've never won a fight with the guy. And they're like, well, they give him some abilities to go and take on the Hulk. Meanwhile, the Hulk is known with the fact that his some kind of evil presence in his head that has taken on the appearance of his father, and he's trying to kick him out of his head, so he goes to his home, where he was born in New Mexico, and tries to deal with him there, at which point the Absorbed Man shows up. There's a big throwdown. There's also some great horror-y stuff in here. This has just been a great book, and it's another great issue in the run. Also on my stack...
I've always liked Crusher Creel.
Yeah. Also on my stack this week, Black Hammer Age of Doom number 7, which is a great sort of lost characters. Very Alan Moore kind of thing, what Lemire does this issue.
Yep.
Does some of the meta... Also Grant Morrison, some meta-fiction type stuff. Iron Man number 6, which... is the first part of a story that builds from the launch of his escape alternate reality, or virtual reality, I guess is better. But that's interesting. Features a virtual version of an old Avengers foe. Spider-Gwen number 4, which is the penultimate chapter of the Spider-Gwen story, and is pretty good. Doctor Strange number 8, which sees Doctor Strange throwing down with Baron Mordo.
That's Punisher. A serious matchup.
Punisher number 4, more of a Punisher going after Hydra. There's a great bit where basically Punisher starts off in a cell, and he has two of his villains are facing down with him, and of course it ends up with him basically getting out and proving what a badass he is. Spider-Geddon, if you want more of Spider-Geddon, there's Spider-Force number 2, and then of course there's the one-shot Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse, which is a one-shot original story that teases all the characters who are going to be in the Into the Spider-Verse animated series, or animated movie later this month. Also want to mention D&D Evil at Baldur's Gate trade comes out this week. D&D have been really good. The Immortal Hulk trade hits this week, which has the first 5 issues, and definitely one of my favorite series of the year. And the Justice League Volume 1 by Snyder and Jimenez comes out this week and is worth a look. Dave?
Let's see, the second issue of the Weirdo Mars Attacks comic.
Yep.
I haven't had a chance to read it, but I like the first one was weird and interesting enough that I'll check it out, also for Chris Schweitzer's artwork. I didn't get around to reading it, but Boom has a new book called Smooth Criminals about a modern-day hacker chick who unfreezes a master thief, cat burglar-type lady from the 60s. Who's kind of in some ways the everything she isn't, and they form some kind of partnership or something.
Yep.
Let's see. Nick, did you read?
I did not.
Okay. So Scotty Young has a new kind of darker-tinged fantasy book out called Middle West. Based on his description, this is not like kind of dark fantasy in the same way that... what was his book that he...
I Hate Fairyland?
Yeah, like I Hate Fairyland or something like that. This is meaning to be a little bit more Stephen King-y, Stranger Things-y.
Yeah.
And I would recommend checking it out. I've not read it yet, but I saw the art looked good, and I know Scotty Young likes, knows his kind of messed up fantasy stuff. There's a GoBots comic.
Sure.
I have to mention it, because it's by madman person Tom Scioli.
Who did the G.I. Joe versus Transformers thing.
Yeah, basically takes Jack Kirby kind of visual style and weds it with, like, psychedelia and 80s nostalgia. So I just have to see the story of whether, I believe, is it Leader One? Is that the GoBots
plane? I think that's
right. I think it is.
Yeah, I think Leader One, whether he will be able to defeat Psy-Kill.
I was like, I remember the villain's name of Psy-Kill, but not, I couldn't remember any of the heroes.
Close to a pick for me this week was also the second issue of Dick Tracy. Still really liking this book, just the right mixture of kind of cartoony and tough guy. They introduce his kind of best buddy Pat in it, and the kid, who's like a little pickpocket in it. So it's clear that this is kind of a re-envisioning from the ground up of the character, where they're going to try and get all the characters in there. And interestingly, like Pat, for instance, who's basically usually kind of a like a beat cop who's sort of like his best buddy. In this, he's a cop on the take, but he's an interesting thing where they have him like he's on the take, but he's sort of like takes the money that the you know corrupt cops like hand out to him, and he takes it back later on to all the people that they stole it from. He's like that way they're off the hook, and his conscience is clean. But he realizes that he's like that's just how things are. Clearly, Dick Tracy's going to send him straight at some point. But anyway, it was a good issue. Trade paperback wise, there was the comic Unnatural, the kind of anthropomorphic comic about the 20-something lady who's, you know, they're all foxes and wolves and pigs and things like that. That sort of where her life sort of serves as a kind of metaphor for real-life strictures on, like, same-sex marriage and things like that. They don't have interspecies. Romance in this world is forbidden, and there's, like, even kind of government control of who you marry. It ended up being a much better comic than expected, but also kind of has a sexy pig lady in charge and, like, really beautiful artwork throughout from... This is the writer who's... her name is Mirka Andolfo. Anyway, it was a sort of one of the surprise breakouts from Image last year. It's an Italian comic, I think, translated.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend it. And then lastly, although I have not read this entire book, there is a Firefly book. Randy, is this in fact one of those new Firefly books that are like canonical?
Yes, I believe
that was their big thing.
I see that it says contributing editor Joss Whedon.
Yep. And so this is like a prose novel that I believe is the first of several that'll be coming out. That I think takes place after Serenity. So if you want some like the official word on what happens after that, then you probably want to pick this up. Nick, you got anything else?
Yeah, just a couple things. West Coast Avengers number 4 finishes up its first story arc, and guest stars Jimmy Kimmel.
This is the cover, at least, and like kind of the concept, although they don't make as big a thing about it, is an homage to the old, from the 1980s, the time when the Avengers were on David Letterman.
Yeah, and this finishes up the Brodok story and giant monsters and... Kate Bishop getting turned into a giant monster falcon.
MODOK's never going to have a serious story again.
No, I'm afraid not.
No, never.
HODOK might.
Archie gets a issue 700, and with that, it's kind of a launching point for Nick Spencer and Margaret Savage kind of first book. Huh? Kind of having all the characters come back from summer vacation and sort of reconnect and find out exactly what they've been doing. Beautiful artwork.
Like, that's, like, above and beyond great artwork.
Yeah, it's kind of Phil Noto-ish style. It also stars, you know, all the people from Josie and the Pussycats to Cheryl Blossom. Josie. Yes, exactly. There's also a few surprise guests in there as well.
What surprises?
I'm not going to tell you. That would just be mean. But it was a good first issue. And then lastly, I've got Batman issue 59, which is a damn good issue, just drawn like no other, like by Michael Janin, that has kind of a big turning point for Batman and the Gotham City Police Department.
What's the turning point?
Not going to tell you. That would just ruin it for the listeners.
Right, my bad.
And also sort of a one-on-one fight with him and Bane, which is kind of interesting as to where things are in the broader scheme of Tom King's 100-issue story.
Oh, interesting, yes. Bane, at least so far, has been kind of the guy who was pulling all the strings.
Yeah.
Like an actual physical confrontation
there? Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
All right. That is everything for comics this week. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about, I don't know, movies, games, some other stuff.
And life.
Talking about comics, movies, and fame. They even talk about board games. No week is the same.
Okay, so I want to start off with my BGG Con report, which is...
I guess we're going to be here an hour.
Yes, probably so.
Go into depth about the 30 games you played.
So I went to BGG Con, which is in Dallas. This was its last year at the Hyatt at the airport, which is good because going through airport parking is a nightmare.
This is kind of purely a play the games kind of.
Yeah, con. So they had some other stuff. They had stuff going on at night, but I went to the spring one and it was fun and I had a good time. And I think I talked about that in the podcast.
Yep.
I had heard from numerous friends, oh, the fall one's much bigger. It's a totally different thing, and it is because this also has an exhibition hall.
Uh-huh.
So there were, like, two full exhibition halls with, like, vendors there and, like, the publishers. And they also had what they called the Hot Games Room, which was basically all these games that are, like, either haven't come out yet or recently come out. And you could go and sit down and play all these games that were either hard to come by
or... I thought there were going to be games on fire.
No, not games on fire. So I went in with a list of about 38 games. I played 9 of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played, like, 15 or 16 other games. And I came out with a list of my top 10, which was not easy because there were a lot of games I really liked. So my top 10 game list from BGG Con 2018, number one is Blackout Hong Kong.
Blackout Hong Kong.
Yep. Now, this one is coming in a few weeks. We're definitely going to get it. We don't have it yet. I will definitely be buying a copy. But basically, there has been a blackout. You know, Hong Kong is the most illuminated city in the world.
I did not know that.
It is.
Makes sense.
There's been a blackout. The game starts on day 4 when people are starting to realize, oh, those lights aren't coming on.
Yeah.
And you each have a faction of, like, you've got, like, these are all cards, and you've got, like, a leader and a mechanic and a doctor, and you're trying to basically provide resources to people as medicine, gas, books, tools, and you try to, there's little cubes that generate these. You're providing these resources and trying to achieve goals and recruit more people. And by putting these blocks on the board in sort of a pandemic style,
yeah,
you if you complete a section, you light up the grid, and you put one of your little houses, and you have control of that area, and you get a bonus for that you can spend on further resources and that kind of thing.
Interesting. Did you say cooperative?
It's competitive.
Competitive.
Yeah.
Your rivals to fix the city.
So, but there's a thing like where if someone's about to finish up a section, you can put one of your cubes in there and you'll get some points for it as well.
That's a little bit of a Carcassonne mechanic.
There's a lot of mechanics to it, but once I learned it was pretty easy. I had a really good time playing it. You start each round by rolling dice to determine what 3 resources are available. Mm-hmm. There's different things you can use to get other resources. They have batteries that are wild cards you can spend money on. There's just a lot of different moving parts to it. Yeah. But despite all that, I found it pretty easy to learn. And it was one of the games that took like 2.5 hours to play. Like, it was a longer game.
Yep.
Also, there was like an hour of learning time.
Sure.
I think on an average play, once you know how to play it, it's like an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that sounds like a cool premise and cool mechanics.
Yeah, super fun game. Really well done. Good design, good mechanics, good art design, all that. My second favorite is a game called Dice Settlers, which is a sort of Pilgrim Time. It is another one that I'm it just came out this week. We have copies of it in the store. I would highly recommend it as a good Black Friday purchase.
Yep.
And it is you use dice every turn. You have a bag of dice that you can buy more dice, and each die has things. And you're basically Pilgrim Settlers, so you're trying to settle the land that you can find a tile and put guys on it. You can turn your campsites into houses that are more permanent, and then you get little bonuses for each tile you control. And you can use technology, like there was one that was like, you could get wagons that let you use one type of die face as another die face, that kind of thing. So it's like dice-based resource management.
Okay.
Really, really dug that. And number 3, I'm not going to go through all these in detail, but number 3, my top 3 at least, Gizmos is one of my new favorite games. We have one copy in the store. It is out of a lot of distributors, so if you want it, come get it. But it uses marbles. And you use marbles to buy little cards that will give you a few of the things. Like, for example, I have one that was like, whenever you use a blue marble and buy a blue card, you get to pick a random marble from the bin.
Uh-huh.
And so I could get more resources, although I didn't know what I was going to get. And then you could stack them. So I have one that was like, if you buy a blue card, I get to pick one marble, I get to get one random marble, and I get a victory point or something like that.
What's your overall goal in this game?
Victory points.
Okay.
So you're building stuff. It reminds me...
It's kind of an abstract game?
No, it's a little bit... It's not unlike something like Splendor, where there's always new cards coming out to buy, and the cards add to your abilities. And yeah, a little bit Splendor meets Potions Explosion, a little bit.
Okay.
But really dug that. The rest of my top ten, I'll just quick run down. Pioneer Days, which is another dice-based Western exploration game.
Randy can't get enough of people in hats who are starving.
Yeah, so number five is Western Legends, which is Western was a big theme of my BGG Con. Western Legends is basically Red Dead Redemption on board game. Like you can be a marshal or you can be an outlaw. You can go either way. There's a track to measure that. The other players, if they're the marshals, can bring you in. You can rob other players. You can rob the bank. You can mine for gold. You can fight outlaws in the hills. You can go
all the coolest stuff of the Old West.
You can play poker.
Ah, nice.
With both the NPCs and the other players can join in. You can rustle cattle between the two ranches, or you can wrangle cattle down to the railroad if you want to be a lawman. And I feel there's a couple other things you can do. You can go to the cabaret and spend money and get famous that way. So there's all this different stuff. There's story cards that you do. It's a fantastic game. It's this big, very replayable, very open world
kind of game. What's the ultimate goal of the game?
To get 20 legendary points.
Oh, okay.
To be the biggest legend.
And then you become Tombstone.
And then you become Tombstone.
Nice.
And actually, all the characters have special abilities. I played Calamity Jane.
Yep.
Someone else was playing Wyatt Earp. So there's a variety of characters in there.
That is neat.
I hear that originally Crazy Horse was one of them.
Yeah.
And then they got a call from the Crazy Horse estate, and they're like, you owe us $100,000. And they're like, okay, Crazy Horse will not be in the game.
They were probably owed that.
Yeah.
So.
I played Detective, a modern crime board game, which I believe we have in stock, which is a storytelling game along the lines of like Time Stories, where you're part of this special investigative unit in, like, I think the Netherlands. And it is very much a cop procedural type thing, where you're each a different specialized cop, and you're following this trail of clues. They recommend you have like a notebook and make notes as you go through. Yeah. We only put like 30 minutes of it. The rest of my group was not into it. It wasn't their type of game. For me, dead on crime storytelling game. Yeah. Right, exactly what
that
I want.
That sounds up my alley too. I'm gonna try that out.
That one I think will probably become a thing where I'm going to get a group together and play it. Like I'm super looking forward to that. Monster Crunch, which is not going to be in stores for a while. It's Target exclusive right now. It is a game from General Mills' storytelling division.
Okay.
General Mills, of course.
Count Chocula.
Blueberry, Count Chocula, Fruit Brute, Frankenberry, and what's the other one?
Do not rouse the anger of Fruit
and
Brute.
And Yummy Mummy.
Yummy Mummy.
And basically, it's a game of numbers. You have a deck of cards that goes 1 through 12. And you basically do, you either put down a number that is the same or higher than the last number somebody put down, and that is the cereal you're eating. You have a little cereal bowl, you put these cards in your cereal bowl, and the person who gets rid of the most of their cards wins. And your power, whatever monster you are, has two powers you can use to modify the numbers and stuff. You can also use milk tokens to combine numbers, so if you have like two 11s, it becomes a 22. Very simple, super fun game with just a great aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that coming to our store as well. I played a game called Welcome To, which is you build little neighborhoods. That was a lot of fun. It's a Kickstarter right now. Guardians, which is basically Overwatch the card game. Played that, really enjoyed it, and we have that in store, and I'm getting a demo copy of that to play. And The Table is Lava. I'm waiting on this to come to the store, but The Table is Lava is a simple meeple game where you have cards, and you throw them at the table. And if they stay away from, if they're a thumbs width away from other tape, from other cards, you put meeples on them.
Yeah.
And then you try to use cards to knock other meeples off the table into the table which says lava. And that person with the most meeples standing at the end of the game wins.
Oh, that sounds fun.
I played this. It's a great one for kids. Whenever we get this in store, it's cheap. It's like $20. It was super fun. I played a bunch of other games. That's my top 10. I had a great time. BGGCon showed me a bunch of games. I brought a bunch of games in that we either haven't had or they're brand new. So we've got a bunch of new games. So if you want to come in and ask about board games or what I think people want to try, or if you like certain games, what games you might like, I am laden. I am burdened with glorious purpose.
I think, Randy, in particular, you need to reach out to all your Overwatch friends and let them know there is a cool board game that kind of reflects that experience in a cool new way.
Yeah. All right, you guys want to talk about Widows. Not the concept, but a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a movie by Steve McQueen, the director of 12 Years a Slave.
Oh. Yep.
By the writer...
Gillian Flynn.
Gillian Flynn from Gone Girl.
Gillian Flynn.
Or Gillian Flynn. And starring... Viola Davis.
Viola Davis
How
is the
I
main one.
How did I miss this?
Liam Neeson, John Bernthal, Elizabeth Debicki.
Oh, wow.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Wow, that's a hell of a
Colin
cast.
Farrell, Robert Duvall.
Robert Duvall, yeah.
Wow.
Colin Farrell kills it in this. So what this looked at like, I bumped into one of our customers when I was out seeing it, and I was like, I said what I was seeing, and I was like, do you know the movie? And he's like, yeah, that's like the Ocean's 8, but that's gritty. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of right.
Okay.
Nick has a better version of what it really is. But suffice to say, there is, like, if for those who saw the trailer, at its most basic premise is the husbands of, three or four women are involved in a heist that goes very, very badly. And they're taken off the grid.
I need to see this movie.
And there's pressure arises that is like super deadly pressure for these women to kind of pay up.
We also forgot to mention who plays sort of the gang members, which is the guy from Atlanta, Tyler.
Oh yeah, Tyree Henry.
Tyree Henry and
I did see a trailer for this. I hadn't realized it was Gillian Flynn. Oh,
why
man.
Am I blanking on the other guy's name?
The dude from
Black Panther and Get Out. Yeah, Michael.
Not the lead from Black Panther.
No, the lead from Get Out.
Oh, Daniel
Okuyye.
Yeah, someone like that.
Yeah.
He is a mercilessly scary enforcer, man. He's one of the threats to Viola Davis, and she has to kind of get some money in a very short period of time, and she ends up kind of forming this plan with these women, the widows of these dead crooks, to see if they can, in very short order, pull something off. And that's the basic premise. There is also a lot of interesting overlapping sort of storylines, including a political struggle.
Yeah.
Between two, it's like a fight for the local alderman.
Yeah, there's a fight between Colin Farrell and Tyler, the guy from Atlanta, over who should be the alderman. And then there's
much more interesting than you would expect.
And then there's sort of an inner fight between Robert Duvall and Colin Farrell about
Political dynasty that he's part of.
Yeah.
That Colin Farrell, I thought, was just great in this.
Yes,
because he is a scary dude, but he is also a guy who like doesn't like being where he is. He's not like I'm a politician on the graft. He is, but he don't like it. He despises his dad, and the relationship between them is very real. Whoever that dude is from Atlanta is a guy who's, like, mixed up in crime, but who's kind of trying to walk the straight and narrow and move into politics to better expand his power. And what's his name from Get Out is, like, his enforcer.
It's Brian Tyree. Okay.
Brian Tyree
and Daniel Kaluuya.
Nick, what else you got to say about it?
I just was very... It's kind of that slow burn. I compared it more to Heat than than Ocean's 8.
If you were going to say, there is a little bit of a... All that really means is to say is that it's a group of women coming together with a plan.
Yeah.
But yes, Heat is closer to the actual structure of it. Which is to say it's kind of a slow burn. There are some big sort of action-y sequences in it.
But this is not an action
movie. It's not an action movie. It's a drama that has one or two bits in it that kind of are real tense action sequences.
And Viola Davis plays sort of this tough-as-nails widow.
Yes.
She's not very likable.
No. Her husband was Liam Neeson.
Yeah, sort of the master planner, the crook who was actually a prominent figure in the community. He kind of was in ties with everyone.
Yep.
But no one could touch him.
Yep.
Their dynamic, I thought it opened up with sort of kind of a flashback with them, or kind of like the morning before the heist, of them kind of being a couple. And
right.
It was great.
Right. Well, considering that few people in this movie are what you would call innately likable or particularly good people, they're all compelling.
Yeah.
Like, I liked every bit of time I spent with a rival alderman, you know? All the writing was great throughout. All these various different widows who have different motivations and different reasons for maybe doing what they're doing. I thought were interesting. Who was the tall blonde lady?
Elizabeth Debicki.
Debicki? Is that how you say
it? Who do I know her from?
She was in Guardians. She was the yellow, the gold people.
okay.
The one who makes Adam Warlock.
She's kind of a beautiful lady who's kind of. She was like a Russian mobster.
Yeah, and it's a very abusive relationship.
She's in an abusive relationship, and her mom is like trying to get her. She's like, "Look, you can be one of those like sugar babies and stuff like that."
We would also know her from. She was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. She was the sort of femme fatale evil person in that.
How interesting.
She was also Randy. You will know her because I didn't watch all of it, but she was also in The Night Manager.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like her in that. Yeah.
So the interesting thing about this is that her character as presented, just, you know, she's initially, you've got sympathy for her because she's been in this abusive situation, but she seems to somewhat be a person with, like, very few career opportunities. She is say something really cruel, a kind of dumb blonde.
Yeah.
Like, who does not, and like her...
Was an overbearing, kind of abusive...
A horrible mother.
Mother.
Who was like, yeah, you can see why she kind of fell into an abusive relationship. But they're also well-painted that by the end of it, some really interesting stuff happens with her and with all the characters.
Did you recognize who her kind of beau is?
No.
It's Lucas Haas.
Wait, Lucas Haas from...
Witness, the little kid.
How can I witness or recognize a kid from the 1980s?
I mean, he's been in other things, too, but...
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
that's
I was like...
He had kind of long hair, a little Amish style.
Yeah, it was, very much. No, but Randy, this is...
He's not Amish forever, is he?
Yeah, that's how it works. Randy, this movie is right up your alley.
For sure.
I do think you should seek it.
Yeah,
I thought it was...
While you guys were working away there, talking about it, I was putting it on my list of movies to see.
I thought it was instantly. I thought it was very, very good.
Yeah.
And like, I'm going to turn it over a little bit more in my head because I could see it. It may be on the great side.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, nice. Nick, you also saw a very different movie.
Yes, I did see the Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Yep.
Which is not receiving the greatest praise, and I can sort of see its flaws.
Yeah.
Not counting the whole Johnny Depp thing, which
right,
I know people
right.
are upset about.
Right, he's definitely kind of problematic guy these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, and as him being sort of the main villain and you're kind of stuck with him at this point,
yeah.
It's a little tough. But the movie itself is still charming. I like the cast. Eddie Redmayne is great. That's the
lead.
Yeah, that's
what's his character's name?
Newt Scamander.
Right.
And he's just fun. Redmayne plays him with sort of this kind of unique personality who doesn't really get along with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's what this whole thing. He doesn't get along with people. He gets along with animals. That's why he can connect with them, and sort of is protective of them. But he does have varying relationships and is fallen in love with one of the, like an Auror from New York. And he's
is this written by J.K. Rowling?
Yeah.
Okay.
But this also dives into a lot of history of the Harry Potter world.
You said earlier that there was a little bit of an info dump vibe to it.
It is, because it's bringing things back from all the Harry Potter stuff, but also, like...
Well, here's the weird thing, is, like, I'm a casual Harry Potter fan. Most of my friends are intense Harry Potter fans, and like the world building stuff is super up their alley.
Yeah,
and I imagine actually some of that would actually be kind of appealing to them. That kind
yes,
of the,
very much
know to the grindstone world building.
Yeah, and honestly, the broader story I tell is really just about Grindelwald, and it's just okay. It's sort of the ancillary stuff around it is fantastic, and Jude Law is amazing as Dumbledore.
I did see a great meme about how they were like, wonder when Dumbledore decided to stop wearing three-piece suits and start wearing sparkly red robes.
I don't know. He should stick with the three-piece suits because he's pretty awesome.
I feel like they're both looks that work. You just need the right day, right age.
Once you get
a long gray beard, it's robe time.
It's robe time. But, I mean, honestly, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you've already seen this or you're planning on it. But the special effects are fun. And I, like I said, I like the character, so that's really why I went. I wanted to sort of see more of them.
You also want to mention a show, Dirty John?
Yeah, this is actually about to hit Bravo this weekend. It I have the Bravo app, so we got to watch it a week early. But this is I know.
Red carpet
No. No, but this is actually a 8-part series retelling the Dirty John podcast, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with. It's a true crime story about a con artist who sort of gets a woman to fall in love with her, and there's like this murder mystery. This is a true story. This mm-hmm. This happened. Huh. This is starring Connie Britton and Eric Bana and a few. Here's the thing. I don't like Eric Bana either. No, I don't think he's a great. I have not liked many movies with him in it. I think Black Hawk Down is kind of the only thing that I've liked him in.
Yeah.
Hello, Christopher.
But here, where he's supposed to play this kind of likable but kind of creepy con man,
yeah.
I was like, there's no way he can pull that off. He pulls it off superbly. You know,
maybe it's just that he needed a smaller screen. Maybe he just wasn't moving.
Maybe yet. So, but
a little bit like Henry Cavill being like overdirected and they're
a little bit, yeah. Because
kind of like forced into like stodgy roles and then kind of coming showing off better in stuff like.
But he's like supposed to be this anesthesiologist that. But is
no all, one's more fun than an anesthesiologist.
I know, but true. Then like he never shows up. Like he only wears the scrubs or kind of crappy clothes, and he's supposed. And Connie Britton plays this sort of L.A. socialite, and he's obviously in it for the money, but she can't see that. He treats her really, really well.
Right.
But it's like, and then her daughters are kind of, can see past it,
yeah.
But they're also dealing with that whole, they're brats, and kind of, I mean, there are a few other words I could describe them as, because they're awful.
So this is a telling of a true story, yeah. And it's one of those truth is stranger than fiction kind yeah. of things.
I was unaware of it. My wife was the one pointed out to me, and I was like, oh, it's got Connie Britton in it. I'll watch it, because I like her. And I was very, very surprised at how much I enjoyed it, because it was just overly well done.
Eric Bana, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Starring with us. All right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Reminder, come in Friday.
Or else. Or we'll find you.
Until next time,
Yo Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.